This is the November 1st, 2018 meeting of the Morgan County Ogden Valley Regional Plan, I'm sorry, Rural Plan Organization, and it's 4:12 p.m. Let me pack up these windows, package. Just for the purposes of the meeting, let's go around and do introductions. I'm Julie Bjornstad from the Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Ray Little, Morgan City Mayor.
Robert Kilman, Morgan County Council.
Scott Jenkins, Weber County Commissioner.
Lance Evans, Morgan County Planning Department.
Brooke Stewart, Weber County Local Transportation Funds.
And so we don't have a quorum right now, so we can't approve the August meeting minutes, although they're in the packet. And I also sent them out, so we can do that at the December meeting. So I guess I wanted to call your attention to two points in the meeting minutes, however, and that was that I think we all are aware James Ebert reassigned RPO duties to Commissioner Jenkins. So welcome.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jenkins. And we last meeting voted to replace Commissioner Ebert was the chair, and we had the vice chair would have been Daryl Rupp. So we voted at the last meeting to make Daryl Rupp the chair and the vice chair Mary Little.
I wasn't here.
He obviously didn't get the corrected agenda, the corrected.
You'll learn not to
thing
me.
Said about moving to Huntsville and Morgan.
Hey, that's Daryl.
He's halfway to Huntsville.
Shoot.
So
okay.
He's turning around.
Yeah.
He asked if the library was a separate building from the city office. I'm like, no. You know where the city office is? In Huntsville? Dang.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. The calendar appointment said the right thing. I think the agenda said maybe the wrong thing when I sent it out.
Oh, I did look at the agenda, just your meeting reminder.
Yeah.
And it did say Morgan.
Okay. So we can go back to approving the meeting minutes when he gets here.
Okay.
So today what I wanted to spend most of our time talking about was evaluating the project. So and we've been talking about the goals and weighing the goals by criteria, and that's on like the second to last page. In the last meeting, we decided to break the criteria or the weighing to the criteria by county, so not just have when we prioritize, not just have the weights for each one of those goals for the RPO, but individually by county. And so that was a decision that was based off of both the technical committee scores being different between the two counties, as well as what we heard from the public and our public feedback in July. So that on the top is what the percentages, what the weights would be for each one of the goals by county. And then the next step in what I hope to do in November and bring back to you in December is prioritizing the projects that are on our RPO plan. And to do that, we need to evaluate each one of the projects by those goals. And that's sort of what this bottom part is. And what I wanted to talk to you guys today about agreeing to how we would prioritize those projects. So we can just go through sort of what I kind of drafted, and then talk about what your thoughts are and how else you might like to evaluate these projects. Mayor Little.
Yeah, what you're saying is if an entity brings a project to this group, then this would be the information or the criteria we would use to rank and rate that project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Who do we foresee bringing projects this week?
Well, so we have that list of projects already, and okay. The idea is that we would take that
from that list.
Yeah, okay. That draft list and prioritize based on like the projects that should be done first, second, third.
Okay.
And then if there are other projects that aren't on that list, we can add them. The idea is that next summer, All of the MPOs in the state have their long-range plans done, and I was hoping to have ours done at that same time. And then it would be a living document if we wanted to add projects to it in the future.
So when do we revisit that and update it?
Sorry, what?
When do we revisit that list and update it with completed projects and stuff like that?
That would be a question for the RPO. Like, how often after the initial plan is done do you want to meet? Is that quarterly? Talk about, like, I think the way that that Willow County one works is that they still meet, but not as frequently. Maybe it's every quarter. But they just talk about what projects need to be done, what projects have done, like where there needs to be coordination with UDOT, that type of thing. And I don't know how well that RPO works, but I can ask Sean and I can ask them what sort of happens after the.
And then we've already started checking some of those projects off here in Morgan, so maybe before we finish, we review that list one last time. Depending on when we finish, we might even have a couple more to check off, so. Contractors convinced Stoddard Bridge is going to be done in about 10 days instead of February. It'll take 30 days to do it instead of 4 months, so he says he's that good. We'll see if he is.
Yeah.
I didn't make it to the update meeting yesterday, so I'm not sure where he's at.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey.
Did you not do something to your face? You look different.
I did shave my face.
Okay.
Which is the first time in like 10 years.
It's like you look a lot younger, but I can't tell if your hair grew out or.
Why, thank you.
Okay, your hair shaved.
It's, you still give me the same amount of respect I had before, though.
So.
Well, that won't be.
Which the bar is down here.
Okay. So, Charlie, what I was just saying was we. If you turn, like, if you hit the meeting minutes, is the next page, and if you kind of turn towards, I think it's on the last page, you'll see the Wayne and then some potential criteria on the bottom for how we want to prioritize those projects. And we're just going to start talking about whether these are the right questions to ask and what your thoughts and feedback are. Okay, so we have the six goals: improve safety, ensuring mobility, maintenance and corridor preservation, providing access to jobs and businesses, providing access to recreation, and safely accommodating active transportation. So the first goal, the way that typically safety is evaluated is we look at the UDOT Safety Index, which is just a comparison of how the actual crash rate on each road to what would be an expected crash rate based on comparable roads. And so if a road has a higher rate of serious injuries and fatalities, it will have a higher safety index rating, which is, I know, backwards, but you want a lower, you want like a 1. And so if you have a 10, then you're relatively unsafe. So the idea is that we would use that score and that would use that score to rate the projects in our plan. We can alternatively add if the project is addressing a hotspot for a crash location. So we have a few places where there's maybe more crashes than average. And those were the two ways I was thinking that we could assign points for that, if that makes any sense. So this is kind of, those are sort of the data that we would have to say what place is unsafe or what place needs addressing of safety. So I'm looking for you guys to comment, buy in.
Yeah.
Does UDOT data cover non-UDOT roads?
Yes. That's...
Yeah, because it's the crash data for that would be turned into like the highway patrol, any of the safety data that's coming in.
Okay, so even the non-highway patrol roads would
be.
So sheriff department or whatever finds something, they'll still report.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want to know if we agree with these two criteria that you put here?
Yes.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else or what was those, and nothing's coming to mind. Unless you've got ideas, but
No, because we, sorry.
Yeah, I'm fine with what's there unless somebody...
That is as empirical as you get it.
Okay.
What if neither one of them apply to a particular project? Does that mean it gets to zero or it gets to 4 points?
What he's saying is if you're doing it, you're assigning points based on the percentage is improved safety, but there is not a safety factor on that particular project. Is it going to get the points?
So what I've typically done for the long range plan and the MTO is each road has a score from 1 to 10, and then I just normalized that and said if you have a 10, meaning your road is really unsafe, you would get 25 points, and if your road is really safe and the LN has 1 or 2, that's your and safety index score, you would only get whatever, 2.5 points or.
So if you have a project that really doesn't apply to any of those, and you don't get the safety points for that project.
Yeah, I mean, it's not improving.
Okay. I'm just trying to see how it's working.
So like state of good repair and maintenance, does the project address a bridge or condition? If it doesn't, then they don't get points for that.
Okay.
But they would get points if it did, so they'd move up the list.
Yeah.
So my question here, the monies we're competing for here, are these monies that are given to this area every year, no matter what, how do we draw this dollar down? How do we draw these dollars down?
Yeah, so the idea is that, unfortunately, the RPO itself doesn't provide, like, construction money.
Mm-hmm.
There would be potentially like study money in the RPO, but not like construction and operation money.
And so where does that money come from? That's what I'm asking.
Are you on the fact page? Just got a list of funding.
So yeah, we're going to talk about these funding sources and funding sources that I have left off. And this is just kind of a quick draft list and wanted to get your input on other sources I should be looking at.
The RPO itself doesn't apply for any funding for any of these projects.
Yes.
The idea is that the RPO is helping prioritize what's important to Morgan County and Ogden Valley so that when the conversations are happening with UDOT, it's brought to them with like a...
Yeah, I understand. I see this list. So, all these funds, the BNC road funds, are actually assigned to an organization.
The BNC road funds, would be assigned to your county.
So everything else is just as grants or you can get.
I have that list on the back is because my idea is that when we go through the projects, like I would tell you which of these projects were applicable to which funding sources.
Okay. In a small group like this, where we all know each other, these prioritization deals, sometimes they don't work so good.
Well,
sometimes we'll look at that and say, look, why don't you do a project and we'll do a project? You know what I mean? Kind of work, wash each other's hands and take care of it. And I appreciate all this, and I do want to do the best you can.
And Morgan County will do all their projects on separate from Weber County. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the way we have it set up. So when it comes time for us to identify this as the project,
do our projects ever compete against each other?
They shouldn't. Potentially.
If they were a state project, they would compare against each other in statewide long-range
plan. If we were going to apply for the same funding, then it could. So at that point, we could have the discussion if we want to prioritize it.
Yeah, and so I'm not suggesting that the prioritization or anything is going to be completely driven by data, but it should be at least informed by data, and of course there's going to be political input.
And all that I'm okay with. Okay.
But tell me I understand this. The point of the regional rural planning organization is to set priorities for the area of that, which would be that portion of Weber County and Morgan County that's in the rural planning organization, and say these are our priorities for projects. Number one, number two, number three. Then when the state funding comes in, we have that priority list and we can go to it and get better funding. Sometimes that'll be a Morgan County project, sometimes that'll be a Ogden Valley project.
Yeah, I mean, like the idea, for instance, in Tooele County was that the RPO was used as a voice to get Mid Valley Highway Extension built. And so, likewise, if there's a major transportation project that needs to have the backing of a group of people in the area, more than just like one or two council members in Morgan, that would be here. It's also a way that if you needed help transportation planning, we could provide assistance to do further studies or collect data. The RPO, Wasatch Front, UDOT, yeah.
Okay, I just wondered who we were.
Yeah. Sorry, Wasatch Front.
That's okay. It's just interesting when you say draw state dollars down. I've never seen any local agency draw state dollars down. And I've been there a long time. You know, it just doesn't seem to happen. Those dollars all get sucked up, and that's rare.
Well, I think that's the point, is that this would be, it's not just Morgan City asking the state for TIF funding. It would be the RPO that has buy-in from UDOT and the MPO and has buy-in from the county and the cities, and they're the ones that are coming and saying, this is a priority in the region. And we went through this process and we got buy-in from the public and we got buy-in from elected officials.
Okay, that's great.
Okay. Welcome. Do you want to say who you are for the recording?
Yes, I'm Daryl Rupp, and I'm late.
The chairman of the RPO.
Because I went to Huntsville.
Oh, no.
You did a field tour. Okay, so we're just talking about the evaluation criteria. We have just finished safety, and we have agreed that those are prime ways of evaluating. Do you have any comments on?
No.
Okay. So then, the assuring mobility goal. So I'm going to just kind of go, I might jump around the agenda a little bit. One of the ways that in our MPO that we talk about mobility is looking at statewide, or we look at our own travel demand model and look at how a project might affect volumes and level of service on a road. And the Wasatch County RPO and in Tooele, RPO, they've used a statewide travel demand model to see what these roadway improvements would do to volumes and level of service. We can do something similar. There's a statewide travel demand model that's being updated right now as part of UDOT's long-range planning process. That statewide travel demand model is not ready yet. They kind of briefly mentioned it at the meeting on, I guess it was yesterday. So
you're getting to be a regular local up there.
Just those two. So they have the base year done already. They kind of know what this area, what the state looks like in terms of where there might be mobility issues. I haven't been able to see the model. They're still kind of tweaking it a little bit, and they're in the process of developing what those future year inputs might be. So what the socioeconomic data, the housing and jobs would be for the future. But what they're waiting on is that they need the MPO long-range plans before they can up. So they take those and they put them in the statewide model, and so that's not done. So this one we might be waiting on just a little bit if we want to use that model to tell us how a project might improve the level of service. The other way I can do it is by looking at how the volumes on the roads around here have been in the last 20 years, and just develop projections myself off model and saying if it continues to grow this way, we might see this level of service and this project might impact level of service by that. So you can do it those two ways, but this one might take a little bit longer just because the tool isn't done. It's a very long way of saying that, sorry.
Did you say how much longer?
So.
About 6 months?
No, the model, the existing conditions should be done in the next month or so, I think. And then they would have draft future projections, but I don't think that will be done until early next year, yeah. Because by April they should have, they're a little bit slower to state than the NPOs in terms of getting their needs for the next long range plan.
I'm assuming that the model is a mathematical model. And so does that suggest that it, well, then it has several variables. Do we need to be able to identify and quantify all the variables that are required for the model for each of the projects that's proposed? Because if we don't have the variables for the model, if we don't have those criteria that we can plug into the model, model doesn't do us any good, right?
Oh, the model would just say, like, you would say there would be, you would say there's climbing lanes here or there's a widening here, and then the model would run and tell you the traffic that would be on that segment of road. And then we can look over, like, how much volume is on the road versus capacity.
So we'd be able to plug in simple numbers, like adding a lane.
That's all that it is. We don't have to say what that lane's capacity is or anything like that. Okay.
For the model. Well, it's supposed to be done calibrating this month, but it probably won't be. So yeah, probably not until early March. But we can also take an approach that's not that technical, and I can just kind of do it off model and say, because there's a lot of our projects are pathways, for instance, which aren't really going to impact vehicle mobility necessarily.
Is that what assure mobility means? Is assure vehicle mobility?
No, I didn't say anything. It just made a sound. That's how I was taking it to mean, because we were talking about accessing
for jobs
and stuff. Yeah. Okay. So if you're either okay with that approach, or you want, I can just even say yes or no based on how I know transportation works, or I can try to do something like off model or with the model talking about quantifying the whole service. It's up to you guys.
Well, do we have anything that's so urgent that we can't wait for the model to be completed?
No. I don't.
So unless someone suggests otherwise, we just wait till the model's completed.
We're moving forward and working our plan that we already have as a county. So
Regardless of what the model says, it's not going to change our plans right now. So
okay, cool. So then, state of good repair and preservation. Normally, I look at if there's a bridge, how the bridge is. If it's in poor condition, good condition, based on the UDOT bridge data, and UDOT has bridge data for every bridge in the state, so that's not anything that's like locally collected. I also look at usually pavement of the roadway. So we're saying if a bridge on a road or bike path or anything is in poor condition, then we want to prioritize that project because we'll be repairing the bridge, or likewise we'll be repairing the pavement. And that data for the roadway pavement is for UDOT has for state highways, and then anything on a local road would either need to come from how the local is seeing the road, or I can go out and do like a field review of what it looks like. And then the other thing for corridor preservation, we can look at if their timing. So I just have, does the timing of development require this corridor to be preserved? So if you know you're getting development pressure, and if you don't purchase that right of way now, then it might be hard to do in the future. Those would be some of the things that I would look at.
Tell me about the bridge bullet. If you have a project that doesn't have a bridge in it versus a project that does have a bridge in it, it automatically push the one with the bridge higher, right? I mean, how are we ranking each of these bullets? Are we giving more points if it checks all the boxes?
So on this one, we can do an and or an or. So I would like to get that feedback from you guys, whether you wanted to just say if it's a bridge in poor condition or the pavement's in poor condition, then either one would satisfy that point. Or do you want to break it down? In the MPO long range plan, we did break it down.
So would it be, does the project address a bridge in poor condition, or does the project address roadway pavement, and does the timing of development require this corridor to be preserved?
It would be that also or.
I like or.
But I think your question is, if two different projects are two different criteria, how do you know which one takes precedence, right?
Right, yeah, so we're trying to rank them in order of most important, right. And if you give
all the ones with a bridge more points than the ones without a bridge, then automatically the bridges are going to be more important.
Are bridges getting more points then? Is that, did I miss that?
That's the question.
Yeah. Well, Tara's idea would be it was just an or, so we would, so a bridge wouldn't necessarily get more points. It would, if a bad bridge and a bad pavement would get the same points.
So, well, what if you have both and you had to choose one?
That's why you have to decide on the and or the or. Because if you're going to do and, then you would have bridge and poor pavement, so it would get more points. If you do or, then you've got that dilemma of, well, is the bridge more important or is the road more important? So if you do and, then it kind of takes care of that for you. But then it may not be the one you want, but then you go back to what Julie was saying a minute ago. This just gets you in the ballpark, and then if you have a project that just, regardless of what data, this data says, that one is more important, whether it be politically or whatever, then you still have that flexibility to make that.
Okay, so we're not bound by
this.
This is just...
What if our major project is to build a new bridge, not a bridge there?
That wouldn't be a maintenance.
Yeah, it's not safe.
If that happens to be our major project, we're going to put number one.
Well, it might not be maintenance, but it might be preservation, right?
No, it's not one to start with.
How about a new bridge preservation?
That's one of the
preservation of the corridor. Preservation of the corridor. Like,
the sanity of the people sitting in line where you get
across the river.
Construction, because it does expand capacity.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Did you do that in the city of good repair, maintenance, preservation, or you do that in the local? Yeah.
In there, we don't have them categories like this, but we do give them additional points for being a new build.
We do that for the mobility because it's adding like activity. Yeah.
What are we defining as preservation? Are we not talking about corridor preservation? Mm-hmm. We're not talking about like reserving land?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Setting aside land for the future? Okay, so a new bridge would be preserving a corridor, right?
If you were buying land on either side of the river...
To do so.
Then you would, to do so, wouldn't that would be preserving the corridor.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. The land is preserving, but if you construct the bridge, the land should have already been preserved.
Okay. That makes sense. Is that how you see it too?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I guess I was just thinking a bridge doesn't necessarily preserve corridor in the same way as like going out and, you know, for West Weaver Corridor, where we're actually
like
now
protecting a strip of land from being developed so that you could actually build a road there.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's more what this is saying.
Well, it's like the state purchasing
like
the
instance,
preservation.
The state purchasing the land for the interchange.
Yes.
That's preservation of the corridor.
Yes. Or, and I wanted to ask you guys about this. So last night or yesterday, there was a person from the public who brought up that the county, this is his words, not mine, that the county wasn't planning all these new roads near Mountain Green where that development was going in.
That new development?
Well, all of the developments now.
Yeah, the county is not planning any roads there.
Yeah, and so, for instance, if we had projects on the plan that would be in that area, then they would probably get more points because that development is happening and we need to start preserving the corridor. And but my question to you was actually, do we need to have any new roads in the Mountain Green area in the RPO plan?
So our mode of operandi up to this point has been that the developers put those roads in, and that the developers basically show how that's going to work with our existing infrastructure. And so they, in order to get their development agreement, they've got to make it something that pleases the council as far as how it blends into the existing. Rather than us going through and trying to preserve a corridor in case somebody decides to develop in that area, we're saying, okay, you take your land, you take your development, you decide how you want your roads in there and how they're going to work with our roads, and we'll decide if we think that's good. If we don't like it, we're going to ask you to move that road or change the way it ties in, that kind of thing. Okay. So that's how we've been functioning for as long as I can remember up here. So
that's basically what the city does too. So at this point, we have not expended funds to buy a piece of land for if and maybe sometime it might become a road. We just haven't done that in the past.
Mm-hmm. Like, for instance, with, what is it, 100 South, the one that's by the True Value?
100 North.
100 North, if you wanted to punch that all the way through.
that private landowners own that, and that's part of the master plan, but the city doesn't own that land.
But that's where she would say you would use your corridor of preservation to purchase
that land. To purchase that land now.
For the city, if that's the
city. But that isn't the way we
would work historically. But the idea in the city would be that you would wait until that private land developer starts selling his land or something.
When he comes in for subdivision, then we plat it.
We're gonna have to roll through that eventually, for sure.
So if you as a developer aren't willing to put that road in,
then your project doesn't get approved.
It's not.
At our level, very seldom is a road so important that a city or a county has to put it in.
Or even buys the ground to put it in.
Now, once in a while, I'm not saying it never happens, but it's rare at our level.
Okay.
That's more of a state.
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion on corridor preservation, but I'm not sure it affects us.
Okay.
In fact, the preservation funds we would use would be buying the edges of right-of-ways of roads that are 20-foot asphalt, and we've never brought them up to standards.
That's to widen one. Depending on how you define corridor preservation, I can see widen one, but I don't see us buying raw ground for maybe if and when a road might go through.
Okay. I view that the same way. Rare.
And I know that was a big reason for this being part of this. But it's just never been how we've done things. And we weren't able, like he's saying, we were never able to find a lot of counties that were in the business of doing that.
The one exception might be if we had an opportunity, unless we already own it, to buy the land that would extend the road past the schools to a bridge over to the fairgrounds. If we had an opportunity to buy that land, wouldn't we do that to preserve that corridor?
That's already been taken care of.
It's already done.
And you're correct. If someone else owned that ground, we would need to do that potentially.
But this point, we already own it.
That ground owned the school.
So it's always been
preserved. The school's partnered with us, so we won't need it for that particular place. Okay. But that would be a great example.
That would be a time when you might want to use that.
If a private person
owned that. When you as a community are trying to build a road, not necessarily a development driven, but just you're trying to free up mobility, that would be a good example of
that. That's the one I guess I'm looking at, right? We all know what it is. That's the biggest one probably going to be on our list to put a tour fund, and this doesn't necessarily apply to it.
Wait, are you talking about Yonge Street Bridge? Or
yes.
Okay, or the entrance, okay.
Is there a back road to the new middle school from Rollins Ranch?
There's yes.
And that's part of the development. Yes. That's part of somebody's development.
Yeah, Parsons. Okay. Parsons is building the road through their pit for the main access.
We don't know how we.
Oh, really? It's not going to be Travers Loop.
But they're putting it out.
Helicopters.
Okay.
Nope. They were able to work a deal with Parsons to build that road, or provide the land for, or something. Anyway, they're putting in the road. The school district is paying for it.
Wait, sorry. Where the road's going from the middle school, not using Travers Loop, but down to
down to the county road, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Through that pit.
Through the pit.
And that's already
that
paid for or built, is being
the connected. School district is paying for that road. What?
Well, we hope.
Yeah, that's what they proposed to us. In my discussion with the business administrator, she said, we're planning on paying for it, but then they want it to become a county road so that we would maintain it.
Okay.
That's her understanding of what the board is asking for.
And then you've got paying for the road, but not for the
That has never taken place. The ask has never happened. And it may be a school district driveway.
We'll get to the details after the building's done.
Which I thought was really interesting because they really started the building before they even had that.
The school district's their own entity. They don't answer the city.
Sorry, I raised that
orders.
Ugly head.
The Trapper's Loop was a few million dollars because they were going to have to widen it, they're going to have to put turning lanes in, retaining walls in order to widen it.
Well, that's just their access now, so I just made an assumption.
Just for construction only.
But even in this case, the school district is talking about paying for the building of the road but not buying the land.
Correct. I think Parsons was going to donate the land for the road to the school district.
Okay.
And because they want to sell that as a development, that land. So they see an advantage to having a road through the middle of it.
The school district, in all due respect, bless their golden heart, are a different entity. If that was a private development, we would make them do the road. But the school district is a different situation.
Okay. So like Lance says, they've never actually come and requested that we take ownership of that road after they're done. But she indicated that that's the hope, is that the council will take that over and that will be another county road. We'll see. I don't know where that's going to go.
So are we thinking the third bullet
point
should be here?
It would be nice to have it done before the building's under construction.
Or would it be nice to leave it on the list as an option?
School would be important.
Yeah, just in case there's something that has a preservation component. But I don't.
We're probably not going to find it a lot in either valley, but yeah. It might be something that could help in the future.
Okay.
Well, so with this verbiage, do we hammer it to death and change it? Do we leave it the way it is and interpret the way we want when we have to vote on it?
I like that part.
You said that a while ago.
I think what this does is says, these are the things that we need to consider, and then as a council, we need to make a decision.
Yeah.
But we don't let the criteria drive us except all of the critical points that need to be considered when trying to make a decision. And so it would be our choice if we, if it's a bridge versus pavement, we simply evaluate all the criteria and decide which one gets the highest priority.
It could be an and or an or. I like that.
And I guess I'm just, when I've done these in the past, the problem with being, I like it to be distinct and clear and give it a score and make some distinction between the two. Mm-hmm. The and ors, you'll end up having 10 projects, and out of 100, all 10 projects have 50 points, and you're nowhere. You've done an exercise for nothing. You haven't prioritized at all. So when you're as you're looking at this, I wouldn't say and or. If our bridge is a higher priority, then they get points. And if they're not a high priority, then don't give them points. Change your criteria.
So,
but that'll give you your good repair and maintenance score, which will then be weighted. And that'll give you your total project score by each county.
So would you rather do an and? So the bridge score is like...
If a bridge is involved and needs... There's a project... In my mind, it's... Does the project address a bridge in poor condition? If that's a high priority, give it some points.
Right, so
Then it moves it up, and there's some distinction between the projects.
So
if I get points for every little thing...
So the Young Street Bridge...
End up
so
everybody gets a
zero.
Sorry?
So the Young Street Bridge project so far gets a zero.
Well, on this one.
And we all think it's a good project.
You would get points
so
on
it. So far it gets a zero.
But that goes back to what these guys are saying. Now we've evaluated it under criteria. Now did we miss something in those criteria?
Flexible.
Yeah, we need to move it up.
So for the shared mobility, maybe we need to have something about improving adding connections, adding street connectivity. Because the Young Street Bridge, you're constructing that bridge, so that there's another connection.
We think it's a huge safety thing. But doesn't address these safeties.
But what's the safety? Why is it a safety thing? Because it's
access to schools, second access out of schools,
and
for emergency situations, we're in deep trouble. Okay. But if something happened there, if one road out of school, we're in deep trouble, folks.
So for the safety, I mean,
it's
maybe
a major safety thing, but it's not a safety of a road.
Well, we can say for improving safety that it's adding redundancy for emergency management. I mean,
That's what that one does.
I think if you look at this, Ray, if you can, it'll fit into improving safety. If you're only using UDOT data to do that, then it wouldn't.
Well, then so the UDOT data we're using is also like the
highest. If I take the Tyler safety, for sure it does.
Might be able to say, well, there have been some crashes or some auto pedestrian accidents out here on Young Street, because there have been.
Sure.
And say this bridge could offset some of that. I mean, it might not be perfect.
That's good.
Yeah, so there's
as far as mobility,
parallel facilities, if there's not numbers for the street that we're evaluating in Hubbard, we use a parallel, comparable.
You do have a pedestrian crash that was a severe injury.
Right here on the corner.
On
right?
Young Street in Second East.
Oh.
So that's a good point. I mean, you did have an issue there.
That was at the stop sign. Okay. And then your mobility, does the project improve roadway level of service? Absolutely. So it would score high there.
Yeah, so that gets a 10.
Service of the other street.
But as far as maintenance and preservation, you're right. It's not going to score anything in there the way it's written. But it is going to score high here.
If you use your safety, you don't use this criteria.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. A lot of times you don't have any data available, so you find some parallel that you use in place of that. So I see your point. I think we can make it work with it kind of the way it is.
So as far as bridges,
still doing it,
traditionally bridges are considered higher by UDOT than what they do. Because it's a safety, health and safety issue.
Yeah.
And so when you say should that be part of it, it probably ought to, I agree, it probably ought to rank high.
Well, so we can always do like the bridge can be, you know, 50% of the score, the pavement can be 40% of the score or whatever. You know, like it doesn't.
If it's and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, and there's not that many bridges that these projects are going to affect, right? There's, I don't have the math of all the bridges.
So these are the types of things we're looking at to rate repair and maintenance.
Yeah.
And then we're going to give each project a repair and maintenance score.
Mm-hmm. And then we add them all up and give you a total score for the project.
Okay.
And then if we don't like it, we'll just change the scores.
Yeah.
Well, no, and then we can say, well, actually, that didn't get reflected appropriately because that is a higher priority. You guys can have that discussion.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess the question is, do you fudge it when you're rating and ranking, or do you fudge it at the end?
If you don't prefer not to fudge it at all.
I mean, there's a lot of, like, for the MPO, you know, like, I did this, not this process, because we had different things. For every project, all 400 and whatever, 93 projects on the highway side. And then we sat down with UDOT, and it's like, well, this project is our priority. We're pushing this project back. And that's a political discussion, and then it doesn't matter what the score is, right? Like, it doesn't matter. So I think we can, I mean, I'm not saying we have a similar discussion, but I think we should go through something that says we looked at the data, and then we know that Yonge Street Bridge is a priority that the city's had for a long time, and that's its priority, even though it doesn't maybe accomplish as many goals. I mean, in that case, it does. But this is what's going to happen with the interchange.
Sure.
I mean, the interchange, we're going to have that discussion at some point where that ranks, and is it going to rank on improving safety? Maybe, maybe not. Is it going to do anything back to transportation? No. Is it doing something for, like, safety
repair
maintenance?
Projects serve a major recreation site, so it's going to score high there.
Yeah.
Given what we're talking about, I wonder if under provide access to jobs and businesses, we should also include or government buildings.
I was wondering how to do that. I had the same thought.
Okay, so hold on. Are we okay with are we okay with the city group repair?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Whether you do commercial or you do public areas, you know, where it says
public
service to commercial / public services, public area, because you have, and I'm actually, because he keeps bringing it up, I have this bridge project in mind every time I read through one of these, and I wonder how it works. So,
the Yonge Street Bridge or the
Yonge
Bridge?
Yeah, the Yonge Street Bridge.
So do you look at that Yonge Street Bridge at the fairgrounds or the Yonge Street Bridge at East Canyon?
Yonge Street Bridge at the fairgrounds.
Okay.
So the one at the fairgrounds, it's not going to lead to any major commercial area unless you're considering the school district and the county city buildings as
commercial
area.
That's so. Do you that's why I suggested that criteria might be changed.
How do you, and you guys that deal with this all the time, what do you define your schools and your city services and county services as? Do you define that as a commercial area? What do you define that as?
Services. I mean, you can have public services, you can have private services, but all of them are necessary for a community. I agree.
So add the public services to
change
that.
This to, or even just services, so jobs and
community
services.
So are we creating a criteria here for a specific job?
No.
I mean, it's starting to fill that one.
I understand, because we keep bringing it up, it's his fault.
Yeah.
We're talking about...
this was an economic development.
Employers and commercial areas, but is that all we should be talking about, I guess?
Well, we've already talked about the middle school. We're talking about the Yonge Street Bridge, and all of it have to do with access to
Morgan,
a public building. And so somehow addressing the fact that the project may improve service to a public building needs to be included.
So in Morgan, the largest employer is the school district.
Yeah.
And our biggest commercial area really is, you know, that bring that many people together is this area, which is our public services, not necessarily a commercial park or something like that, or a retail shopping area, something like that.
But you wanted to say jobs, education, and jobs, businesses, and education, and then the schools would be in that education.
And that's what I say. Do we want to separate education from anything else? I was trying to think of some way to incorporate education and all your public services all together, so we didn't have to have five things listed.
Same, same.
Just call them community services because that's businesses as well.
Yeah,
unless we're trying to identify the difference on purpose.
Businesses and public buildings. Isn't jobs and business redundant?
So then it does cover the employer side of it.
Yeah, but that's as far as I know.
We can say
jobs and community services.
Oh, okay.
And then we can talk about major employers, commercial area.
What does the third bullet say? I don't understand the sentence.
This is something that actually I think the county used in their plan, and the idea was that when we talk about like where jobs and employment are, and there's roads that are in that commercial area or in that job center, but there's also ways to get there. And so
there's an extra word, or there's a word that
the A should be two.
Service A.
Sorry.
Service two.
Two A principal.
Yeah.
Oh, two A principal.
Sorry.
No, two principal.
Charlie.
So
I'm sorry.
Cut your beard.
So, we're just going to anyway.
So before I make this comment, I want to say that I don't think we should beat these up too much,
right. Because
at the end of the day, this is going to go to a completely different body, and they're going to hash this all out again, and they will probably look at this very little. So I think we've got a pretty good document here. Yes, I agree that one doesn't make sense because it's
maybe positive.
But I also look at that and say, bullet point number one and bullet point number three, what's the difference?
Yeah, to employer, access to employer.
Yeah, and so I was just trying to cover the bases of saying, like, if there's a road that doesn't actually touch that employer, but we all know, for instance, I-84, it doesn't necessarily
lead straight to the employer.
Yeah, but it's a commuting route.
Okay.
This is sort of just me brainstorming for you guys to provide comment to. So if we feel like all the bases are covered with the first two, then we don't need the third one.
Well, maybe bullet point, the first bullet point is direct. Does it improve direct service? And the third one, indirect. Would that help? Because I think that hits both of them, and I do think it's important for us to talk about indirect and direct and rank them
a little bit differently.
I'll
second that, and let's go with it.
And then I'll add the community services to the commercial area.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the other one's pretty much just, does it service a recreation site? Yes or no? Oh, that's fine with me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
You
forgot a word in there.
Stop it.
Just kidding.
The problem is I had them all done, and then some of them were questions. As I go, all of them need to be questions, and then when I turn them into questions,
they revise them. Yeah, no, I understand.
I forgot the word. Okay. So then, safely accommodate active transportation. I have two ideas down, and then you guys can tell me sort of what your thoughts are. One is that we have a lot of active transportation projects on the plan, and we can look at whether these are sort of high demand bike ped projects using Strava data, which is what the state is using. It's like where people are, you know, recording their routes, and we can see where the demand is. Or we can look at what the improvement is would change sort of the comfort level and the safety, the separation of bicycles and pedestrians on a route.
Or
we can do both.
Can we do and?
Yeah. Okay. Unless you guys had other thoughts about how you wanted to. There's not a ton of bicycle and pedestrian crashes in the area, so I can't just use
crash data
because
there's... I mean, do you want to add crash
like
data as part of it?
I mean, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 crashes. Maybe 11, if you count there. Crashes over the last like 5 years. And, I mean, that's a lot, because that's 11 people that got somehow injured by a vehicle.
That'd be worth it to have it be a factor.
Okay.
and we're using it for improved safety for cars, we might as well do the same.
Yeah, I'm just looking at where they actually are. And we don't have projects. The only project that we have that has a pedestrian or bike crash on it is Young Street.
When do we come back and revise these? Annually?
Yeah, I mean, whenever you guys... I don't have a timeline for that.
I don't decide.
Just wondering how many more crashes might occur.
Yeah, okay, between so them. We can add it on the bottom.
There we go. Julie's hoping this was the final.
No, it was...
I was going to say she wanted this to be the final meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be perfectly honest with you, I don't know how Wasatch and Chihuahua have, when they're sort of done with the initial planning process, what other tests they've done. I know that Wasatch and Chihuahua have both updated their long-range plans. I don't know the timeline for how they did that.
Right.
And I'll go over what Wasatch did, because I have a question about whether you guys want to do something similar, but they do have an update of, like, these are the projects that were constructed off the list. And right. I'll show you guys that in a second.
Well, the reason I ask that is every year when CDBG goes through the rating and ranking, they look at what projects got approved the last year, and they think, okay, well, which ones need to be lesser weight, which ones need to be increased. So they go and they make those adjustments. I don't know if we want to do this on an annual basis.
And we do
basis.
That every 4 years when we update our long range
plan. 4 to 5 years sounds right.
Okay. Okay. So I will start looking at all the projects and evaluating them based on this, and hopefully start bringing you some of those scores in December when we meet. Okay, let's just skip to the back page, which is the draft funding list. What I'm hoping to do is, in the table that like ranks all the projects, also tell you what funding sources those projects are eligible for, just so when you guys move forward your process in terms of starting to implement the project list, you'll have an idea of. We'll talk in a second about the feasibility, but like where there might be issues, how we might get funding, just to help you implement better, faster. So I've kind of put together a draft list of major funding sources off the top of my head. And I just wanted you to review that and tell me if there's a funding source that you use frequently that is not on this list or that you know that I should include. This is just a draft in all updates.
Ours are on there.
So what, Mark?
I said ours are on there.
Oh, okay.
The ones we use.
Weber.
I'm only aware of the local option sales tax. That's all I'm doing.
The transportation alternative program. Is that UDOT or is that WFRC?
So for these areas, it would be going through UDOT.
Just UDOT.
So we only administer that on the urbanized area.
GOED has some funding. Is that recreational trails program? What's the funding?
They do have one.
I can't remember what it's called now. It might be the
recreational
trails program.
Yeah, I think that recreational trails
program
is GOED.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Well, then I'll start with that list. Then it provides some information, and then start assigning projects to what you might be able to, what's eligible off that. Okay, so it came up to Weber County and haven't done Morgan County yet and drove all of the projects and started looking at the feasibility, where there might be. Sorry. Where there might be some issues and implementation. What did I do with that?
Does Huntsville get Prop 1 funds?
I can't answer that.
Yes.
Yeah,
it should.
County and city.
Absolutely.
They just want to get the UTA portion.
Right.
We wouldn't include that kind of funding on this list, though, would we?
Well, BNC was on there, so I didn't know if they were thinking about.
But Prop 1
the
funds would be a local option sales tax.
Right.
It's a different one than ours, but yeah. Because the municipalities get a percentage just automatically sent to them, right? And they can use it, similar to BNC road funds.
It's 0.1%.
I don't know what the percentage is.
I think it's 0.15 to UTA, 0.1 to the counties, 0.1 to the cities.
But don't they have to be incorporated to get that?
If they're not incorporated, it goes through the county.
Yep. So the county has the overall, and then the county has the unincorporated.
Just curious.
What is B and C?
The state roads are classified class A, B, C, and D, and A is state roads, B and C are county and city.
Okay.
So B is county, C is city roads, and it's based on their
just remember gas C tax. For city.
C for city B and for B county. For county.
It's a portion of the gas tax that comes in and gets redistributed.
Checks out. Makes sense.
It's never enough.
That would be true.
And FTA, that's Federal Transportation Administration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, sorry.
That's okay. I'm just trying to figure this out.
There is some talk at the legislature and their transportation interim committees about streamlining the local option sales tax use. And so hopefully freeing up some of the local money to be used on a wider variety of things for maintenance and preservation of different roadway types so it doesn't have to be attached to like collectors and above or... Mm-hmm.
So those funds all that are extra sales tax revenue.
Are they put into B and C to be distributed, or are they distributed differently?
The local option sales tax, they're distributed slightly differently than the B and C.
How are they? Because it's not listed here. Yep, right there's the local option sales tax.
Okay. So the B and C is coming from the gas tax, and then the local option is coming from your sales tax. And so it's based on partially on population and partially on where the point of sale is.
So the new quarter cent that came out a couple of years ago.
The fourth uh-huh. quarter.
So how is that distributed?
It's I think if you're in a county that has UTA, then often the sales tax gets brought up, and then 0.15% goes over to UTA, and then the other part gets redistributed based on. I can't remember the percentage based on the population and the percent of the point of sales collection. It's where the...
But it's on the gas tax.
No, so the fourth quarter is the local option on the sales tax.
So those are, I think, what we call the Prop 1 funds, right?
The Prop 1 funds are on your sales tax.
So then the cities get a portion of the sales Prop 1s and then the county has...
And then your B and C's are coming off of the gas tax.
So when we raised the gas tax a nickel, and then they came through and put a quarter on that for cities and counties and UTA.
That was on the sales tax.
Not on the sales tax on the gas.
It was based on like all of your other things. The gas tax itself is what they've raised with.
I didn't remember quite that way.
SB, not SB 80, because that realigned everything.
I mean, HB1.
They did raise the gas tax recently, and they reformulated it so it would grow with inflation, and then there would be a ceiling, and then the floor would raise, and that was
two years ago.
Yeah. And so it was done at the same time, I think, as
The last minute, Jerry Stevenson stood up on the floor and added a quarter set in there, and divided between the cities and the county, and UTA.
Mm-hmm. That's the Prop 1 fund.
Yeah, and that went through the. You guys had it on the ballot, and then the gas tax was just passed by the legislature. And I think it was the same year that both those things happened.
It gets complicated how that comes out. It actually does happen.
Yeah, because it all goes up to the state, and then the state redistributes it.
Right. How it got redistributed.
And if you remember, there was an issue with the gas tax. Last legislative session, they fixed the portion where they were trying to hold harmless the counties, but then the distribution formula was messed up so that some counties were getting too much money and the urban counties weren't getting enough, and then they were trying to fix it.
Fix it.
Yeah, I can't remember that bill. But I think that was the last session.
Is there any UTA funding available?
Yeah, so you would have... that would either come off the local option sales tax or the... Quarters 1 and 2 are UTA and part of the fourth. But you're not in a, at least Morgan County's not in the UTA service area.
That's
right. So either you would need a contract with UTA or if you wanted to do like a shuttle service or something, then you could apply for FTA funds. Now the state has the transit transportation investment fund, which needs a 40% local backing, but you could apply for that, and then, I mean, those funds, that hasn't started yet, right? That is starting to be collected this year. And so if you want to do like a shelter or something, you could get state funding, or you could go through FTA's like rural, or you can contract with UTA.
Is Ogden Valley part of UTA?
We've got ski bus, but not regular service.
So do the UTA stuff even apply to this group?
Well,
River County it does.
Yeah, none
I'm not
of those.
Sure with Ogden Valley, it does Morgan for sure.
Well, these FTA funds you can get without being in UTA service.
Not permanent stops, but ski bus stops.
Ski bus stops.
So right now, Morgan County, you guys don't even have.
So Ogden Valley does have some.
No, we don't.
And availability.
We have like van on the course, right? Is that
where we are to more going?
You have van pools, because I just saw one passing up here. But I don't know how you guys, how does that work? I guess if the people live in Morgan and work in Salt Lake, you would be eligible because you're working in Salt Lake.
Yeah,
I guess Salt Lake is paying, then.
It doesn't matter.
But the people in the van pool have to pay towards the van pool.
Right,
that's right.
So for the local option sales taxes, are you guys planning on trying to pass the fourth quarter?
As a cog, we talked about last meeting, and we're going to talk about it as a cog and potentially look at that. Is it third or fourth quarter?
I don't know what
they were bringing up third quarter.
Yeah,
fourth quarter is UTA.
Third, I think, is
what we're talking about. Well, if you don't have UTA, then that 0.15 gets redistributed to the county.
We're going to start to look at the third and fourth quarter to see if one works for us. We started that conversation.
Okay.
In our budget meetings, it came up as an alternative if the ramp tax does not pass on Tuesday.
That's the tax, I forgot that.
Oh, yeah, ramp. It's important.
You guys got a ramp tax in here?
Yeah, I didn't see it in there, though.
Got it there somewhere.
Unless that's just statewide stuff.
You didn't send that thing to my mailbox? Yeah, you know that one, the county one? Everybody got that little flyer? It's from the county's rural information pamphlet.
Yeah, I finally got mine on Wednesday.
You didn't see it in there, did you?
No, because when we went to submit it, we were told that the deadline had already passed and we didn't put it in. So thanks for rubbing that in. Appreciate that.
I didn't put it in you. I just mean the officer, not you.
I know. We're having a little frustration there with getting that kind of unnecessary information out to the guys.
Okay, I think we're going to skip the feasibility aspect, and then when I come back to you with... I'll come back to the technical committee with cost, and we can talk about where there's issues or where I have questions about how to cost something out because there's a major, sometimes like with some of the pathways, especially down Ogden Canyon, I mean, those are done by UDOT, but for instance, if that wasn't done by UDOT, there's some issues with like the mountainside,
for instance,
or winding some roads on like 66 and 65, you have some issues with the grade separation. Yesterday afternoon, there was a meeting about the Mountain Green Interchange. Robert was there. So they are just starting. So they're about 30% of the way done through this,
corridor study.
I guess that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, you really did. A good way of putting that, corridor study.
Corridor maintenance study.
It's
called corridor study. I'm pretty sure they're making it up as they go.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
So
it's really an appeasement study, is what it is.
So I was also kind of thought their conclusion was weird. So they're looking just so the other people who don't know. So they're obviously looking at whether they should move up the Mountain Green Interchange from Phase 3 to Phase 1. They're looking at. Only, it sounded like, volumes. For the first phase. And then this portion of the corridor study would be done in February of next year. And the outcome of that study would basically say yes or no.
19 or 20?
19.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, I mean.
This next year.
Fair,
this
fair question.
Year. There you go.
I get what he's saying. When you start talking about governments, this year and next year and FY18, 19s, none of it ever really coincides with today's date. So
in February of 2019, they would come out and say whether they thought that the interchange based on traffic should be moved forward. And then they would talk about next steps.
Whether sorry, based on volume, traffic.
Yeah. Okay. And the next steps, would they look at a more detailed study that might take into account like economics or what have you? So
is that to say they're considering potential economic impact? Because I thought future economic impact wasn't a viable criteria for building a road.
From U.S. perspective, you mean?
Yes.
So currently they're just looking at the traffic volumes, and then in SB 136 of the 2018 legislative session outlined that UDOT had to re-examine its prioritization process to include economic development and land use.
Oh.
And that process is underway and won't be done until like summer of 2019.
Is that current or future is the question? Current economic impact or future projected economic impact?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it'd be both.
It's future. Yeah, well, I guess you would need to do.
Could be either or.
Some
depending current. On what they, depending on what they put in.
I've never talked about and or so much in meetings.
How many codes have you written?
Depend what
lives. I was just thinking about it. Obviously, you didn't take a logic class in college.
I don't go there. The world's black and white.
So I'm slightly confused about what the next steps will be after they do this portion of the Mountain Green of the corridor study.
So my take was when they finish the corridor study, we will have a traffic analysis based on population and traffic, and current and future land uses, the projection of the needs for when this is needed, and some sort of traffic engineer type score on that.
But that will only take into consideration winter traffic and not summer traffic.
No, so actually they showed the seasonal variations, and summer traffic in the area is like 20% higher than the annual average. And actually winter is like ever so slightly below the average because obviously summer's higher. So
summer traffic on Trappers Loop is
June,
higher
July, August
than
is the highest.
Winter?
Yeah.
Where are they?
It's not on Trappers Loop. It was on like old
Highway
Road between 84 and Trappers Loop. So basically from the interchange to Trappers Loop.
Okay, so they're not considering that.
That's where the traffic counter is.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Summer traffic would be higher because of reservoir people are like boating.
80% of reservoir users come to Davis.
I can't believe that. I can't believe there's more boats go over that hill than there are people going to school.
I'm wondering how recent the numbers were because last couple of years
that was a smell test.
I'm wondering if it's the fact that all the boats only count twice.
What did they say?
It's interesting. Does it count twice?
Well, I wonder if it's so far behind.
I'm sorry.
Between summer and the winter months, what was the difference? Do you remember?
It was like,
I can see the graph.
July was 18% higher.
18, that was it.
And like
than the average.
Of the average daily traffic over the year.
Then what about January?
And January was like 90,
lower. Yeah.
95%.
You know what, here, I'll show you.
So average is 100%.
I'll show you.
Winter was 118, summer was 95. Or summer was 118, winter was 95.
With 100 being the base level.
If I can give you an email, I will show you the
23% difference.
Yes.
I still wonder if it in the fact that we pulled the boat. That's
so counterintuitive.
I hope that they're more sophisticated.
That the summer traffic is greater than the summer it is.
I can forward this to you.
So if there are more people boat than won't ski.
So are they not measuring traffic then between now and February? They're just analyzing data they already have?
They're still measuring traffic every day. It's a permanent traffic.
It's a permanent counter.
Oh, okay.
I'm curious what the difference is on Ogden Canyon.
December.
Winter versus
February is almost 100%.
I wonder if they've
been interested. Maybe it's just a mode
kind of
shift.
Correlation. They claim this so one, so
it's like a 19% difference.
Old Funchbox, more people are getting boats. Permanent station that's there all the time.
Yeah.
Winter, spring,
that's what their data is saying.
But
but they always leave it there. And so they might have something like that.
Yeah,
I
think yeah, go.
They do by the reservoir. I'm curious.
I can look at that for you. It should count axles because they know how many trucks the truck percentage. So on a boat.
That's what it is. They're counting twice.
That's what I'm wondering. If a boat
counting the axles.
No, their traffic counters are more sophisticated.
Because they know like they can break it down by the classification, so they know like a motorcycle.
I'm not sure they're more sophisticated. Aren't they just a tube that runs across the road? Ding, ding, ding.
So they know what all of those are.
That's the basic one. But the ones that they have built in the roads, I believe, can actually distinguish, as Julie just said.
Motorcycle, car. You usually get it based on the classification.
Truck and boat.
They know the distance.
Well, there's a lot of immigration there. So basically, it's on Sundays and it's packed every Sunday. They have the night meetings now, and then there's a lot of trailheads right around there.
You're saying Ferguson is attracting traffic in the summer too. Okay, so that's
a good point. There's enough traffic to still go to the place. That would be
traffic to the dam would be above beyond.
Yeah, I wouldn't take that.
We view that as a 1-to-1.
I'm also thinking during the summertime you probably have a consistent flow, whereas in the wintertime it's the morning. 8 to 9 versus 3 to 5.
Traffic during the summer.
Here, it's a class.
Anybody going from Davis County?
Maybe this class
going
3.
Up to
Pedestrian Bridge, and we'll just
do that.
So I guess somehow they know.
Or class 2. Class 2 has.
I'm surprised that I would have thought it been the reverse as well.
Class 3 is.
So I can look at the seasonal variation.
It's probably that weekend traffic to Snow Basin.
I really have when we head up there during the weekend.
Well, the traffic that goes over to Monte Cristo in the summer, so it's recreating.
So I can.
But you got traffic going to Monte Cristo in the winter too, because that's where your key snowmobiling is in northern Utah.
True, but I'm not sure it'd be as heavy as the people go up there to camp.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
so I can also pull that data for.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I can. Because I mean, all that data is publicly available, so I can pull that for you guys to see what the.
To pull it for both Old Highway and the canyons.
Yeah.
So we can.
Do you want me to forward? I can forward this Mountain Green Interchange PowerPoint to you guys.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Let me do it.
Chris sent it out yesterday, Dave.
Yeah.
It must be yesterday.
So, what's your summary of your 7A?
That they're 30% done, and then you'll get a traffic study in February.
Okay.
The February is like next step, so I think you get your traffic survey done in December/January.
If it moves from, I forget the numbers you said, like class 3 to class 1 or class 4 to class 1, whatever it was. Am I using the right language?
No, it's a step.
Phase.
From a phase 3 to a phase 1. What does that do to the? So right now the projection date is 2040.
Yeah,
if it moves to a phase 1.
So every phase is 10 years. So okay. phase 1 ends in 2020.
So the last plan went from 2015 to 2025.
2025. Yeah.
Yeah, and then 2025 to 2035, and then 2035 to 2040.
45.
You know, the problem
so if it moved to phase 1, it would be done, so completed by 2025, is that
no,
what you're saying?
No, so now phase 1 would be 2019 to 2030.
Oh, okay.
But well, also the TIP is already, like all the TIP funds in the statewide plan is already up to 2023 or 2024, and there's no funding there for that, so it would come in sort of later.
Okay.
You know, from rural Utah's point of view, one of the issues you have here is just because you're a certain phase of road today, doesn't mean in 10 years you'll advance that next phase. Because if traffic studies come through and change, all of a sudden you get booted back because your traffic's not high enough.
Yeah.
Well, also the Olympics.
Like the Eagle Mountain stuff out in Utah County. Okay.
So also the Olympics, I guess we're in the top 3 with Reno.
Denver
and here. So if we were to get the Olympics, that interchange would probably move forward because one of the sites is Snow Basin.
That's true.
And that was actually slated as one of the projects for the 2002 Olympics. But then they realized we can just do traffic management during the Olympics and put all that money into the Wasatch Front road issues. And so they pulled it off. Because it was actually on the STIP back then. But they pulled it because they decided traffic management would handle the problem.
So they built the parking lots and ran buses instead of having cars
drive up. Which they might do again.
Because they still don't have anywhere to park all the cars up the snow basin. So.
So what you're telling me is this committee is just spinning our wheels.
So people say, come on, man. But that's going to come down to the same politics that it's fighting right now.
Spinning wheels.
If they announce the Olympics, Weber County, Davis County, Salt Lake County, Wasatch County, and Summit County are all going to be vying for those funds for the exact same reasons that Morgan County says they do.
Right.
So it's who's going to have the most political power to get it. Is that going to be Morgan, or is that going to be, is that going to be Summit County? And, you know, so it's still going to be the same pot of money, but now everybody that has a venue is going to be using the same argument that Morgan's going to be using. And
you want to believe the Transportation Commission will be a little fairer than that? Because they're not political.
I mean, the good news is that there's already, like, for instance, Utah County just had a 15 tech corridor. Davis County is getting 89 done. They just improved some of the road on like 248 and on I-80. So a lot of these counties, I mean, hopefully the commission would say a lot of these counties just got stuff updated in the last 5 years, and Morgan County hasn't really had anything in the last
20.
Yeah. 30.
20, yeah,
unless,
20.
Unless they say, oh, but they're the second highest paid county in the state. Yeah, we shouldn't do anything for them.
We had to pass your third quarter, and then they might start considering, because you'd have a match.
Yeah. You know, the Ogden Valley General Plan suggests doing everything we can to direct traffic up Traverse Loop instead of through the canyon. Well, it's not a slight to Morgan. I mean, if Morgan's looking for economic development, send them through that gateway right there. It's just a better corridor. And so when we're looking at who's got more persuasion, maybe Weber County and Morgan County can kind of come together on that.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing we can do in the canyon, but build a tunnel under the mountain. That's not.
What about Charlotte Dover?
We've tried a few times.
I just don't think you're dedicated to your job enough, Charlie.
Sorry. My heart's in Morgan.
I think you could have a tunnel.
Oh, you did. You think we could have a tunnel?
Their tunnel.
You know, but they haven't built one yet in Salt Lake, right?
No, the Salt Lake water users. They tunneled under the Duwamish the Weber River.
The Mountain Accord talks about a tunnel going from Big Cottonwood Canyon over to Park City.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But, yeah, our 6 mile tunnel, I don't know.
You have a drawing.
I'm not really smart, so help me out. You folks understand.
Yeah.
I know, I'm ignoring
smart
you.
Smart like a fox is what
If this doing. Is a freeway.
The red line says I-84.
Yeah. And this is where you get off. This is eastbound.
Mm-hmm.
You get off the freeway down here in Mountain Green.
Mm-hmm.
Up there, and then this is the road of
Trappers
Loose. These people here, and I guess in my mind, I'm having a hard time understanding how you put in a free exchange right there, how that solves any problem. These people here,
they'll
have less traffic
off of those homes.
But other than traffic from that section there, what else would it do?
Well, the idea is that if you move the interchange here, you would open up this area for economic development.
Okay, so
you change the stop signs the other direction so you could get off and go up without stopping.
Plus, you would add the other leg.
You would have no westbound traffic on going through Mountain Green.
How much do you have now? Oh, you're saying westbound.
From the Peterson exit to Trapper's Loop, you would have no traffic getting off there.
So are we
westbound?
Are we even monitoring how many people come from westbound to go to Trapper's Loop? I don't know. There's lots of them. I don't know if they did.
So
that's why I was saying, if they're only counting between eastbound 84 and Trapper's Loop, you're missing a chunk of traffic that's coming from westbound.
So I don't know how big that is. Maybe it's huge, maybe it's nothing.
It's much smaller, though.
Yeah, it's smaller.
I mean, there'd be
are there many people
off-ramp already?
If you go to Pearson, you go to Trapper's Loop. I don't know.
Isn't Snow Basin included in that, like that group pass that allows you to ski at multiple ski resorts?
I have no idea.
And I think it is. So if I'm at Park City, I can have a pass that applies to the resorts at Park City, but also Snow Basin. So you potentially have traffic coming from Park City around the back way.
I understand the concept of the word potential.
So this,
but
this,
we don't know. There's no count here.
Yeah, right. There is actually. So this section of road has, last in 2015, had 7,500 people for the average annual.
A day?
Yeah. And then this section had...
And that's average. That doesn't... It's not
like
by season.
4,800.
Oh, really? 48?
So almost half.
That surprised me. I thought it had been...
Think
like
about...
Yeah.
Think well, about who your most of that traffic is.
Come that direction? Well, you got a lot of people coming and going from Cottonwoods.
Yeah.
They come to school in the city.
And if that's here and not up by the off ramp, then you got all those people that are the same people that are coming here.
Mm-hmm. I understand the people that are going all the way to that intersection are the people traveling to their schools.
That's right.
That's most of what that is.
I understand.
That's why it would be interesting to see it by month rather than as an annual average.
So a lot of that's
the annual average doesn't speak accurately.
And how much
the problem
just,
is
how much just local are going to travel with anyway.
Right.
Regardless of this, they're going to do it anyway. I heard you the big word potential for economic growth for commercial. The word is that's a big potential. Again, I'm not very bright, but if we talk to commercial people, the thing they tell us, when you have enough rooftops, we'll come.
Yeah.
Just build an area, a way for us to come. We're not coming until there's enough rooftops. We have pencils to our account, we have pencils for our CPA, we'll be there. We'll ask for a location. So until there's enough rooftops, commercial is a potential guess, or a wish or a hope.
Yeah, but in a situation
from my
like
war
this,
perception.
UTA, the state, that's state road, and they're trying to connect that to the federal highway system, and that's their way of just doing it. The view now's getting close to the right time. The problem, you know, there's no sense of fighting this.
I'm not fighting it at all.
Yeah.
I met the first person yesterday. Julie and I met her together. The only person I have ever had come to me and say, we don't need an interchange, we don't want an interchange, why are we doing an interchange? And that was that lady that wouldn't go.
Oh, that loves Harrington Station?
Yeah.
Oh, that's... I know who that is.
She thinks it's really nice, not gaudy at all.
That's the first person, council members, anything that have ever said, we don't think you should do it.
That's what she was talking about.
Everybody else agreed we would love the interchange. It's just whether or not, how much resources do you expend in trying to convince UDOT to move it to a different time period? And do you have those resources to expend? That's the only conversations that I'm ever hearing.
Yeah.
And UDOT will move it when the traffic numbers generate.
That's right.
Yeah, and I'm not fighting against. I'm just trying to understand.
Well can that's I give why you I was asking about little... taking into consideration economic impact, because if you put in the exchange, it's my understanding is the resort's going to put in a hotel, and as soon as it becomes a destination resort instead of a day resort, all the rules change.
So,
sorry, the resort is saying that they'll put a hotel in after the interchange.
That's what I'm saying.
So, no, the resort
on
said
the resort.
Their plan is to do their development on the Weaver County side, immaterial of an interchange or Morgan County, anything.
Yeah, they did a traffic study and said, not even an interchange, or you've got enough capacity in what you currently have on the ground.
Steve Holding said that interchange does not affect what we do whatsoever. Now, there are people that are saying different stories.
Trying to make you believe.
But in a personal conversation with Steve Holding and Roland Haslam, he said, your interchange and the other things you are doing will not affect what we do 1%. The only thing that would change what we do is if Morgan County puts in water, sewer, and power to our property, because we're not going to pay for it. Because Weaver County already has it.
They don't have enough money.
They said, we're not spending the money on that. Weaver County has already done all that. We're putting our growth on the Weaver County side.
And that interchange does not affect it because that road already handles the traffic and they can get up there like what you were saying. May not be the most convenient, but as far as Snow Basin is concerned, they are not changing their plans based on that interchange.
Okay.
They are moving forward.
I stand correct.
But that's not what's been getting told out in the public.
Yeah, you'll need to check it. That's...
I got to believe, though, the day that interchange comes in, you'll have two or three hotels like crazy, right?
In Mountain Green.
Because the destination will be within
because it's an interchange.
15-minute drive to the resort.
Dwayne, and all the rest. Dwayne Johnson told me that there is a hotel chain in Salt Lake City that has told him the minute the interchange is finished, plan on us building a hotel. We won't do it until the interchange is there, but once it's there, we will build.
Well, those hotel chains, they'll be looking to pick up the westbound traffic. It'll be easier for them with interchange. I mean, you've got that hotel right at the mouth of the canyon in one of the most obnoxious places that doesn't seem like it's good for a hotel. These guys will be the first hotel that anybody sees coming out of Wyoming.
That is a horribly obnoxious place, and I cannot believe how busy they are.
I know. Yeah, they get business.
It's the only game.
It's the first thing you see when you drive out of the canyon. Yeah, this will be the first thing.
Well, you could get off Riverdale and work your way up to that one, or you up there by Roy, or you can go all the way out to 21st before you get to one. So
there's nothing
down 89 to Farmington. There's nothing close.
Yeah, it'd be a popular place.
Yeah, there's Layton Hill.
Is there a hotel there?
Just behind the
Oh, you're right. Restaurant.
So Ray, two thoughts. One is the interchange itself becomes an economic driver.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that factors in, and that offsets a lot of the need for housetops. Also, the incomes in Morgan County offset the need for a lot of housetops. Farmington Station, by all the retail commercial maps and way of thinking, should not function and should not be a good place. Mm-hmm. However, it is very successful, and it's made a huge difference to Davis County and generated tons of sales tax because of the income. And even though they don't quite have the housetops,
they've got the anchors they need to pull people from further away.
But that's the question. Is it just the local area, or do they pull people from all over?
No, they're a regional attraction.
I thought so. At the end, again, that one doesn't solve this one. That one's a regional attraction. People drive to that. There's more people within 50 miles of that than there is within 50 miles of this.
My point is that the people within 50 miles of Farmington Station shouldn't make Farmington Station. The population is not, the rooftops is not enough. They're successful.
How many rooftops have they built since they built up Farmington Station?
Well, that's true. They've grown and they're doing good, but
coming after
but that's because Farmington Station went
in. 50 miles within Farmington Station, I would say the population is enough to handle that. Because 50 miles...
5-0.
But Target says, I need 100,000 homes within this distance. Yeah. The rooftops with their formulas, Farmington Station did not meet when they started doing
it. Oh, when they started.
It's the 3, 5, 10 mile radius.
Of course, Weber and Davis County are...
But the incomes offset that. The incomes in Mountain Green offset that. So there is some flexibility there. That it would actually help.
Okay. Well, I sent you guys the that PowerPoint that Chris presented
yesterday,
and then when we come back in December, I can pull some more information for you guys on the Pioneer Reservoir, the two roads, and Traverse Loop about seasonal variation, and maybe a little bit more information about if those seem like they're local or more regional trips.
Awesome.
And I'll also come back with some of the evaluation for the projects that I can do now. And we can start talking about how much projects can cost.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, this meeting's supposed to go to 6. Anything else to talk about?